Oh, man. It stings because it's not true, but it feels like it's true. I just sneezed twice before we came on the air. And I'm not going to lie. My right shoulder blade now hurts. From sneezing. I feel as rested and as energetic as I felt in a long time. I have gotten 7 to 9 hours of sleep 2 consecutive nights in a row. I don't think I've done that since I was in my, like, early 30s. But I just sneezed twice, and I'm relatively sure that I just strained, sprained, pulled, or otherwise injured something in my right shoulder blade.
Would you like
because
me to go
it
down
is
the
on fire.
See if someone has one of those impact guns or something. I mean, I'm not going to do it for you. They may have an extension. I don't know.
No, but I do have to say, we do have a wonderful opening for if there are any like massage parlors in the area that would like an endorsement. I will straight up trade you.
Are they still called massage parlors?
I think so. I don't think they're letting Bob Kraft take that away from
me. Yeah, okay. All right.
If there are any massage parlors that would like an endorsement, I will straight up trade you. You just come in here like one morning a week and do like a 15-minute back rub while me and Lonzo are on the air, and we'll endorse the hell out of you for it. Straight up. You know, not even like the weird stuff. I'll keep the shirt on. I don't care.
Yeah, I don't want a massage, but Rob wants
one. Fine, I'll take two. I'll take Lonzo's.
Yeah, I mean, because it's just not going to help. I mean, there's just so much pain. When you're done, then the pain's right back. I mean, you know.
Fair enough. I, on the other hand, God, I love a good massage. Love a good massage, man. I do.
Do you get your toenails done too at the same time?
You know what? I'm not gonna lie to you. About 6-7 months ago, the lady friend said, "We do a lot of stuff that you like to do for dates. Can we do a me date?" And I said, "Yes, ma'am, we can. What would you like to do?" And she said, "Taking you out of the comfort zone, let's go get manicures and pedicures." Or, as she said, "Let's go get a mani-pedi." And I said, "Okay, I love you that much that I will let someone else touch my feet. I love you that much." So we did. And I kind of liked it. NGL, kind of liked it.
Yeah.
It was kind of nice.
You're probably not ticklish like me.
No, I am.
Someone get kicked in the face, and
that
it's
was,
not my fault.
That was honest, like honest to everything, my biggest fear. I was like, some poor lady is going to go to rub the bottom of my feet because I am unfathomably ticklish on the bottom of the feet. It is the wife's favorite thing. It'll jolt me out of a sleep. If I take a nap, she sees the bottom of a foot exposed. Oh, just finger up the bottom of that foot. I am jolted awake,
no,
to go for a run in a marathon.
Not up the just. You can't go up the.
Just a,
okay, all right.
Just a run of the fingers up the foot. I don't need a Red Bull at that point. So, I was like, if this lady rubs the bottom of my feet and I kick her in the face, she is going to go through the wall on the other side of the nail salon. And
wow, you got that kind of leg power? You think you could project a smaller human being to a wall?
Dude, I'm like Saquon Barkley if you touch the bottom of my feet.
Okay.
Touch the bottom of my feet, I can squat a Buick like Jalen Hurts. And I'm going to keep it a buck. She started, and I was nervous AF. Because they do like the, you know, they trim the nails down. They get the cuticles all cleaned up. They get you all spruced up, and then they take this, like, real thick, like, exfoliating lotion, all right? It's like lotion, but it's got, like, sand in it, and they rub up and down your leg, and I'm going to keep it a buck with you. I about needed a cigarette when that was done, and I don't smoke. And then they got to the bottom of the feet, and I forgot, because my intention was to tell this lady, calves are good, top of the foot's good, toes are fine, don't touch the bottom of my feet, because I'm likely to kick your head off your shoulder like a Rock'em Sock'em robot. And then she ran that first thumb up the bottom of the foot, and it was amazing. It was amazing. And so now, about every month and a half, the lady and I go get a mani-pedi. And I'm going to keep it a buck, fellas. You can mock, you can make fun of me all you want to. I don't care. It's nice. And when they do the hands and they do the massage right there on like the fleshy part underneath the thumb, oh.
Do you have to put your bare feet on the floor at any point?
Nope. Nope. They have this little, you sit back in a leather recliner, and you can bring your drink in there with you. Sit back in a leather recliner. They get a little tub. They fill it up with like scalding hot water. You just dip the feet right into that scalding hot water, and you just sit there and relax. And then the lady comes by, and she like lifts up a little pad. You put one foot out, and she does that leg and that foot while the other one's in the hot water. And then you switch, and she does that leg and that foot while the other one's in the hot water. And then you put them back in the hot water, and she rinses them off for you. And then she drains the water, and then she dries them off with like the softest towel in the world. I'm not going to lie. The first time she started going through the process, I am like, what kind of soft-ass, pampered SOB am I? And then she finished, and I was like, so same time tomorrow? If I could get that done, if that happened to me while I was on the show, the tone of the show would change entirely. Hey, guys, welcome to the Rob Brown Show here on the Fan Upstate.
By the way, I just want to say, if you're watching on the stream, Rob's shirt is not blurred out. It just it looks blurred out on the, like it says something that we had to blur it out. To look at it, it looks blurred out on the screen. It just, yeah. Don't do that.
What, the Eddie Guerrero?
Yeah, that's not what it. That's not what it looked like.
All right, we have got a lot to get to, a lot to talk about. We're going to talk quite a bit of college football here in this hour of the show. We got more AP Top 25 discussion to have, and I go looking for ways that we can take the Gamecocks of Columbia, South Carolina, and the Tigers of South Carolina, Clemson. And we can all meet in a kumbaya circle. We can all gather around a common enemy.
What's to do that?
Because, you know, the rivalry.
Yeah, rivalry should be a rivalry. I don't need a come together moment where we get, shake hands and stuff. I mean, what's that? We're 9 days away from what you said from football season. Why we want to be friendly?
Because I'm trying to set up a segment. That's the reason why. And I'm going to tell you what the segment is, because I have found today's kumbaya moment. I have found our come together right now, yeah, yeah, over me moment for both the Gamecocks and the Tigers. And I'm going to tell you what that is coming up in the next segment of the radio program. But it is 7:07 in the a.m. portion of the day. You have now less than 53 minutes till you've got to get to the office. Sit yourself down in that chair, get logged in, respond to the emails, work for like 7 to 9 minutes on that project that you super duper told the boss you'd have done by the weekend. Nah, we'll see. But then you get to the best part of the day. The part of the day where you walk down the hallway and you go talk to Ben. And when you go talk to your coworker, Ben, he's down in janitorial services. Super dude. Absolute sweetheart, and loves some football. You don't want to embarrass yourself. You want to know what's going on in the world of sports. And if you want to know what's going on in the world of sports, worry not, my dear friends. That's what Lonzo and I are here for, and that's why we do this. It is the water cooler cheat sheet, the top three sports stories that you need to know before you get to the office and start talking sports this morning with your coworkers. When you do, this is what you are going to be talking about. Let's dive right in. And I see you all on the stream chat. I'm coming back to you. But we got to do this. Item number one. The college football AP preseason top 25 has dropped. Boise State, last year's representatives from the group of 5/6/7/8, maybe, is also in this year's AP top 25. They will start the year off at number 25, a spot behind number 24, Tennessee. They follow Texas Tech, Iowa State, Ole Miss, and Indiana inside the top 20. And number 19, the Colt, Texas A&M. They trail Oklahoma, Kansas State, the ACC's runner-up last year. SMU is at number 16, one spot behind the Mighty Gators of Florida at number 15. Michigan is 14. They trail South Carolina, the Gamecocks, checking in at number 13 in the AP preseason poll. They trail Illinois, Arizona State, Miami is number 10. 9 through 1 goes this way. LSU, Alabama, Oregon, the lowest ranked team, receiving one first place vote. One spot behind number 6, Notre Dame, the highest ranked team, who received no first place votes. They trailed Georgia with 1. Clemson is the number 4 team, according to the AP top 25. Clemson did receive 4 first place votes. The Buckeyes of Ohio State are number 3, 11 first place votes. The Big Ten opponent of Penn State got 23. They are number 2 in the country, 5 points in total behind number 1, Texas, who received 23. five first place votes. So that's 25 through 21. Coming up on the show, we're going to talk about who's too high, who's too low, who's going to finish where they are, higher than they are, lower than they are, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Fun little quick tidbit, by the way. Speaking of Texas, first time in the school's history that they are ranked numero uno in the AP preseason poll. They are also great one courtesy of your number three ranked Ohio State Buckeyes. The Longhorns of Texas are the first team in AP preseason poll history to be an underdog in week number one. The Buckeyes of Ohio State are a 2.5-point favorite, keeping in mind that you get 2.5 or 3 for being the home squad. It's effectively a pick 'em game between the Longhorns and the Buckeyes of Ohio State, but the Buckeyes do get the 2.5 to 3 for being in the crib. That makes Texas the first ever team entering the season number one in the AP preseason poll to be an underdog in week one. Let's get to item number two. I don't care if you don't like it. It's one of my favorite things that is going to happen on the sports calendar this year. The Ryder Cup. Team USA. Yeah. Taking on Team Europe next month. Well, the teams are starting to round themselves out. Two more additions solidified themselves to both the European and American League, American teams for next month's Ryder Cup. U.S. Open winner J.J. Spaun, by way of falling to Justin Rose in a playoff at last weekend's FedEx St. Jude Classic. That is the St. Jude Classic. I was just really dumb when I typed out the sports flash this morning. By way of checking in second to Justin Rose, has solidified a spot on the Ryder Cup team. He will be joined by Xander Schauffele. They will both join number one golfer ranked in the world, Scottie Scheffler, on the U.S. team when they take on Europe in the Ryder Cup. Spaun moved to number two in the U.S. team point standings and qualified for the team with his third runner-up finish of the season in the St. Jude Championship in Memphis. He will be a Ryder Cup rookie. J.J. Spaun ranked eighth in the official world golf ranking, lost to England's Justin Rose on the third hole of a sudden death playoff at TPC Southwind. He secured his spot over on Team Europe. By way of being the most hard luck golfer in the history of the friggin' game, Tommy Fleetwood has secured enough points to join Masters champion Rory McIlroy on the European team. So now, we know at least a few of the guys that will be competing at the Ryder Cup next month. There are some other names that are still in the mix for Team USA and Team Europe. Russell Henley, Bryson DeChambeau, Harris English, all in the top six in points. Keegan Bradley will make six captain's choices August 27th, 3 days after the Tour Championship at East Lake Golf Club in Atlanta. Justin Thomas is seventh. Colin Morikawa, Ben Griffin, Bradley, Maverick McNeil, and Andrew Novak are all in the running as well. Just outside, Brian Harman, Cameron Young, Patrick Cantlay, and Sam Burns are in the mix for roster spots. We'll see who makes the squad. Let's get to item number three. The Nevada Supreme Court yesterday sided with former Las Vegas Raiders coach John Gruden in his lawsuit that alleged the NFL leaked damaging emails to the media before he was forced to resign from the team in 2021. Now, interesting about this result, and I do think that the language of what was determined is very important here. In their 5-2 ruling, justices did not determine whether or not the league had leaked Gruden's emails, but they found that the league's decision to force his complaint into arbitration proceedings, which were overseen by Roger Goodell, was, quote, unconscionable, end quote. And there's your SAT word of the day, unconscionable. Work that in as many times as you can. Over under 3.5. The court did not find that the NFL leaked John Gruden's emails. The court did not find that the arbitration itself was egregious. The league did not find that John Gruden was forced out of the head coaching job for the Las Vegas Raiders, What they did find is that the NFL to force his complaint into arbitration overseen by Roger Goodell was inappropriate. It is the reverse of the old we investigated ourselves and we found we did nothing wrong joke that we so often make about authority figures at different entities and organizations that say, yeah, there's a problem and we're going to look into it. And then they come back 2 weeks later and they did. Well, after a full investigation into ourselves, we have determined that ourselves did no wrong. So we're good. Thanks for being here. Don't talk about it anymore. What the 5-2 ruling says is that they did not determine if the emails leaked that contained some level of racially charged language at the very least. They did not find that the NFL released or leaked those emails. Not enough proof was brought to the table for that. What they did say is, if you were going to have some sort of hearing, some sort of arbitration, some sort of judgment made about John Gruden, it probably should not have been overseen by the guy who runs one of the allegedly aggrieved parties. Yeah, that part is kind of understandable. As a former employee, Gruden should not have been bound by a provision in the NFL Constitution mandating arbitration for such complaints, according to the court. The court wrote, quote, by its own unambiguous language, the NFL Constitution no longer applies to Gruden. If the NFL Constitution were to bind former employees, the commissioner could essentially pick and choose which disputes to arbitrate. Basically, they are saying that once John Gruden resigned from the position of head coach of the Las Vegas Raiders, that he was no longer an employee of the league. And as he was no longer an employee of the league, any hearings regarding his behavior, his actions, his future within the league should not be overseen by the guy who is in charge of the actions, decisions, and future of the league. It should have gone somewhere else. What does this mean for the future of John Gruden? I don't know. Does this mean that he is welcome back into the league as a coach, should he so desire? I don't know. Does this mean that even if he did want to come back into the league, that any teams would hire him? I don't know. What I do know is Chucky's kind of become a social media star with the folks over at Barstool over the last year and a half or so. He has been hanging out with a lot of teams. He was at Athens hanging out with the University of Georgia the other day, and Chucky said that he still wants to coach and that coaching in the Southeastern Conference would, quote, be a dream. Could we see Chucky back? Might this free up some parties who may have otherwise been concerned about Chucky to give him an opportunity? Or is there too much attached to the name, too much baggage around Chucky to bring him back? We'll find out. We'll keep an eye on the story as it develops. Hey, our live stream is up. Facebook.com/TheFanUpstate. The Fan Upstate on Twitter. The Fan Upstate on YouTube. Go find us, like us, follow us, subscribe to us, and turn the notifications on because we're live every weekday from 6 till 10 a.m. And do the same for The Rob Brown Show on Facebook, on YouTube, and on Twitch. We got Jacob in the chat. We got Cruz in the chat. We got Steven in the chat. And they are just having a dialogue over there in our chat. You can come chat with the Armada. But they've had some interesting conversation and discussion. And I'm going to bring it on the radio. We're going to make Jacob and Cruz the stars of the next segment. You could be in that mix, too. Go to the live chat. Text us on the Hub City Spartan Burger text line, 844-326-3663. Call that number. Get on the air. Let's talk football here on the Rob Brown Show in the Fan Upstate. I say with great regularity that I firmly, genuinely, and honestly believe that the show is better when there are more voices involved in it. This is why I tell you the Hub City Spartan Burgers text line phone number, 844-326-3663. That's also the number to call in and be on the show. That's why I tell you to tweet me at The Rob Brown Show 24/7/365. That's why I tell you to hit me in the DMs, to follow me on Instagram, to follow me on TikTok, and to join us on our live chat, our live stream at facebook.com/thefanupstate, thefanupstate on Twitter, thefanupstate on YouTube, The Rob Brown Show on Facebook, on YouTube, and on Twitch. Well, I don't regularly take a whole conversation that is playing out on the chat and decide, I really like this, I'm going to have a talk about it. But I am here because Cruz and Jacob are both in the chat right now on our live stream. Go again, find it, follow it, be a part of it. Every morning you can chat and have your voice heard on the show there as well. When we were talking about the AP Top 25, I mentioned that Clemson and LSU playing in the season opener for each. The Clemson Tigers hosting the LSU Tigers in Clemson, South Carolina. And the conversation we were having at the time is that while I think most of us agree that preseason polls are, I think, not the worst thing in the world, but also I don't think they should come out until like week 6 or 7 when we really have a much better idea about what teams are. Otherwise, you might end up with an unranked 0 votes received South Carolina finishing in the top 13 or a top 10 Florida State ending up 2-10. And I pointed out that Clemson v. LSU, I don't really think needs numbers out front of the two team names to be sexy if you are a follower of college football. Because on one hand, you got Brian Kelly and the LSU Tigers trying to prove that, no, seriously, it was going to take some time, but we're ready to go. And more importantly, rumors that Brian Kelly, should he fail to meet certain benchmarks this year, could be on the hot seat at the end of it. On the flip side, and this was the take that fired old Cruz up in the chat, I believe. I said on the flip side, Clemson's preseason drama that leads to this game being a little bit more interesting than just a top 6 matchup, two sexy teams getting on, is the fact that for a lot of people, the belief is that this year is a referendum on the philosophy of one Dabo Swinney. Is Dabo's philosophy still valid, still successful in the year 2025. And that's not to say that Clemson must win a national championship to prove that it is. Only one team can, and it's very hard to do. I'm saying he better be close, right? Being 9-3, winning the ACC, getting in and getting blown out in playoff game number one, ain't gonna do it. Being 11-1, being 12-0, winning the ACC, getting in, winning a playoff game or two, that'll do it. So I think the referendum is a fair one, is a legitimate one to say we will find out at the end of this year if the Dabo philosophy is good or not. Cruz popped in and said, this guy, pointing at me, must be a casual college football fan. This Clemson team is statistically one of the best teams Dabo has ever assembled. Sure. I would also point out last year Mike Norvell's Florida State squad was one of the best statistically that Florida State had ever assembled. They went 2-10. Chemistry matters a lot. And in fact, I would make the argument that chemistry might matter more now than it ever has in college football. Chemistry, putting a team together while utilizing, if you do, the transfer portal, matters quite a bit. So, numbers-wise, statistically speaking, yes, it means a lot. That's why Clemson is a top 4 team, according to the AP Top 25. A top 6 team, according to the coaches' poll. But then it sparked the discussion. Jacob said, call me casual if you want, bud. Kate is still the quarterback. He's free to prove me wrong. Cruz said, Kate is projected to be one of the top quarterbacks to be taken in the 2026 NFL draft. Jacob said, predictions are just that, predictions. Like I said, he's free to prove me wrong, but I don't buy it. Let's wait and see how his performance is, and then we can talk. He's historically been very good, but if he can't handle pressure, if he can prove he can handle pressure, then I'll shut up. Cruz said, do you buy the Arch Manning hype, the guy who has barely touched the field in 3 years? Jacob said, not at all. He has a lot to prove. I'm a Gamecock fan, and I don't even buy the Lenoris hype. He's got work to do. Cruz responded and said, I'm a Clemson fan, and I buy the Sellers being a fantastic athlete hype. I need to see what he does with a good O-line around him so he doesn't have to run for his life. Jacob responded and said, he's a great athlete, but he has to stay healthy, and we have to have a running game. Receivers have to step up and make catches, and our line has to block. If all those things don't happen, he will try to be Superman and end up hurt. And the boys kept going on for a hot minute there. But I think you got the meat and potatoes of the conversation. And the meat and potatoes of the conversation is something that I think I've been hitting on for a couple of weeks now. And I was hitting on it before, though it really, I think, for me, jumped to the forefront of the conversation during SEC Media Days. The conversation being that I think if we look at the AP preseason top 25, and let's look at the AP preseason top 25, not the coaches poll. Let's look at the AP. Let's look at Texas. Arch Manning. As mentioned by the boys in the chat, question marks about Arch Manning. And I think fair to have him. Arch has two starts. Arch has a bunch of spot play outside of that. Steve Spurrier took a bunch of heat about a month and a half ago when he said, if Arch Manning is indeed all that and a bag of potato chips, how did he not beat out seventh round draft pick Quinn Ewers for the starting job, especially when he got into the playoffs and you were looking for a national championship and you were a legitimate contender? And I said, that's a very fair question. It's a very fair question. And at SEC Media Days, I would make the argument that about 75% of the people that were there said, Arch is football Jesus. And about 25% of the people said, I got questions about the guy. And the folks who believed he's football Jesus, my goodness gracious, were they spreading the good word of Arch Manning? And the people like me who said, I have questions about the guy, nobody talked us off of that position. I'm open to be talked off positions that I hold. That wasn't one that happened. Penn State, Drew Aller. Drew Aller is one of the guys that's being labeled a proven commodity at the quarterback position. I would also like to point out that if you go back last year to the three losses sustained by Penn State, Oregon in the regular season, Oregon in the Big Ten, and then in the playoffs. If you go look at those three games, they were, without doubt or question, three games where Drew Aller did not look good. He just didn't look good. So, questions about Drew Aller. Yes, good regular season quarterback. Ain't no doubt about it. Statistically speaking, one of the best. Do you trust Drew Aller in a big-time playoff spot? Do you trust him if the Big Ten ends four teams deep to go win the one or two big games on the schedule that will determine whether or not they are in a Big Ten championship game? If they get there, do you trust them to go play in a Big Ten championship game and win it? If they get there and win it, do you trust them to go play in a playoff game under actual big pressure, not taking on the Group of Five representation, and win that game? I can't say yes. Questions about the quarterback. Ohio State. Ryan Day said about 3 days ago that the QB1 competition is going to, and I'll quote him directly, come down to the wire, end quote. Now, Julian Sain is going to be the starting quarterback for the Buckeyes of Ohio State. That's not a question mark to me. However, the question mark is, and I say this with some level of exaggeration to make my point, who the hell is Julian Sain? Now we know who Julian Sain is. That's a guy that Nick Saban recruited to come to Alabama. Nick Saban, with the exception of some of you would argue I would not, Jalen Milroe, Nick Saban didn't really miss on quarterbacks at Alabama when he was there. If he was good enough to play at the University of Alabama under Nick Saban, as far as I'm concerned, he's good enough to likely play anywhere that doesn't have a Lenora Sellers at the helm already. That being said, he hasn't played yet. Not extended time. We don't know what this cat's going to be. Questions about them. The Clemson Tigers. Most people believe that Cade Klubnik is going to be a Heisman finisher this year. Most people believe that Cade Klubnik is going to be a top 1, 2, or 3 draft pick in next year's National Football League draft. There is a very, very good chance that Cade Klubnik could be competing with Spencer Rattler for the QB1 spot of the New Orleans Saints next year. That's very much a possibility. However, as Jacob has pointed out here in the chat just mere moments ago, there's a lot of people that still have questions about Cade Klubnik. Is he going to be able to handle the pressure of playing in the biggest game? I would like to say that that ACC title game against SMU last year, where Cade Klubnik did indeed handle the pressure, because keep it a buck, if Clemson doesn't win that game, they were far from guaranteed from getting a playoff spot. And he handled the pressure there. But can he do it again? Georgia, Gunnar Stockton, questions. Notre Dame, J.J. Carr, questions. Oregon, Dante Moore, a guy I think might be a Heisman contender, but also a guy who doesn't have a lot of XP in that role. questions. Alabama just named Ty Simpson their week one QB yesterday. Quick, tell me anything about Ty Simpson aside from his name. And in 7 minutes, I'll ask you again, what's his name? And most of you will have forgotten. Questions. LSU, Garrett Nussmeier, probably the least questioned of the group that we have mentioned so far. But not to say there are zero questions. Miami, I'll tell you what, the more I look at it, the more Carson Beck might be the most proven quarterback inside the top 10 at the University of Miami. But Arizona State, Sam Levitt, questions. Who's Illinois' quarterback? Any of you know? No. Questions. There's like three proven commodities, and two of them I still have questions about inside the top 14. The point here is, a good chunk of who's going to be around in this top 25 at the end of the year is going to be determined by who's right and who's wrong about their QB1s. All right, when we come back, I'm going to get you South Carolina fans and you Clemson fans, you're going to hold hands and sing Kumbaya together about something that is happening on both of your football fields this year. I'm going to bring some unity and peace across the land next on the Rob Brown Show with the Fan Upstate. As athletic departments around the country continue to find new ways to raise revenue for themselves, the NCAA has, over time, started to change rules to allow for different revenue generation opportunities. One of the changes that has been made over the years, very recently. One of the changes that has been made very recently is that athletic departments are now allowed to add sponsor logos on their football fields. Now, in years gone by, it's been allowed on basketball courts. Some have embraced it, some have not. Television networks have begun, in some cases, to put green-screened, superimposed advertisements down on playing surfaces when available. Yesterday, it was made official and announced that the University of South Carolina has become the most recent school that will add logos onto their field. They have engaged in a partnership with Blanchard Cat, all caps. It is a heavy machinery sales and rental company. Their logo will now be featured on the home field starting with this football season. The company, Blanchard Cat and Blanchard Cat Rentals, is headquartered in West Columbia and run by President and CEO Boyd Blanchard, as well as Executive President Rozier Blanchard, both of whom are graduates of South Carolina. South Carolina's massive Block C logo will still sit at midfield, and SEC logos will remain at the 25-yard line in opposite corners. And beginning with the Gamecocks' home opener against SC State on September 6th, two Blanchard logos will appear on the turf on the 25-yard line opposite the conference marks. That, okay, got it. Understandable. The unfortunate part about this is in order to make way for those logos, the University of South Carolina is apparently, at least for now, though this could very well change, those logos will replace the state flag emblems that were most recently on the field at the 25-yard lines. Now, South Carolina did make it clear that those flag logos could possibly return. They could possibly return elsewhere on the football field. If the partnership runs up with Cat Blanchard and is not renewed, they may take their place back on the 25s. But this is one of those spots where college football is inevitably going to be corporatized, and there's not much you can do about it. Because by allowing football over the years to become a bottom dollar organization, a bottom dollar entity, a world was created where nothing matters more than money. And that now includes every aspect of running your athletic department. Nothing matters more than money. Can you put more money on the table in NIL revenue to ensure that you have an opportunity to bring in an excellent recruiting class? Can you put more money into guaranteed money for head coaches so that if and when it is time to replace one, you have got a sludge fund available to dip into to get the best coach that you can get while also paying off a guy that you fired, which is becoming more and more frequent and regular? This is just the way to do that. It's just the way to get more money. And as I have told you for a number of years now, at some point, the fans would start to feel that. And I am not talking about the boosters who are getting hit up for more and more and more and more and more money with great regularity. I know that because I am on the mailing list for my former university, the University of West Florida, go Argos. And I have noticed over the past year, 2 year and a half, a dramatic uptick in the number of places and the number of ways that my university has reached out to me asking for more money. As if I have any. But they've asked. And every now and then I'm like, all right, yeah, here's, you know, here's $25, here's $100, whatever I got. If I got a little extra, I'll throw some down. My university won me a national championship a few years ago. I'd like to see them back in the hunt. And they're a tiny little baby university down in Pensacola, Florida. So, like, yeah, shout out to the Argos. If I got $20 to throw in the pot, I'll throw it in the pot. I ain't a big money booster. I hope one day I can scratch them a check for $1 million and get them to name the damn football stadium after me. But until we get to that point, here's my $20, right? The reality is, no matter what size schools you are, and I do not care if you are the little bitty baby University of West Florida down in Pensacola, Florida. I do not care if you are the South Carolina Gamecocks. I do not care if you are the Clemson Tigers. We have, as the Phantom of the Opera once famously sang, past the point of no return, the final curtain. It is inevitable. This is why, when I have banged the drum years ago and said, hey, fans, you better start to speak out now about the corporatization of college football because there is a tipping point that you can't return from. Ladies and gentlemen, we're past it. It's like way in the rearview mirror at this point. Be glad that the most egregious place that these schools have elected, and while Clemson has not yet announced that they will place a logo on the field, I'm going to call the shot. They're going to. Inevitably. They're going to. Because if they don't, that means that the Gamecocks are monetizing something of great value, especially if you are a team that is in national championship contention. Because while Cat Blanchard and Cat Blanchard Rentals may not necessarily be a national company, watch what happens when Dr. Pepper sees how much advertising they are getting out of that. Every time Lenora Sellers squirts out of the backfield, off guard, there he goes, crosses the 40, the 30, the 25, over the Cat Blanchard Rentals logo, into the end zone, touchdown, Gamecocks. Dr. Pepper's going to go, yo, they just got their name said on TV as a Heisman Trophy potential winner ran in a tutty. Their logo was the brightest and most vivid thing on the football field. Clemson is starting the year in the AP poll at number 4. Every game that they play, starting in week 1 with LSU. Every game they play is going to see the 25-yard line on both sides of the field broadcasted in vivid Technicolor 4K, 1080p, highest of high resolutions. And you get, your logo put on national television. Now, for a smaller school, like UWF, yeah, I mean, they're probably going to end up, you know, getting 10 grand from some restaurant in UWF that just wants to put their logo in front of a bunch of sports fans who come out to watch the Argos play against Delta State and then put it in their brain that when you're on the way home from the game tonight, don't forget, stop at Bobby's Chicken Shack, proud sponsor of the University of West Florida Argonauts. But if you're a top 10 team.
Is that an actual place?
No.
Okay.
Be dope if it was, though. I would 1,000% eat at a place called Bobby's Chicken Shack. If it was Clemson taking on LSU, week one, 7:30, biggest game of the nightcap in week one. I'm going to go out on a limb here and say LSU versus Clemson, because it is the night game, may have the biggest audience on college football weekend. It's either going to be obviously Ohio State, Texas, or it's going to be LSU, Clemson. And I'd be willing to bet that because it's on at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 6:30 Central, 5:30 Mountain, 4:30 Pacific, I am going to wager now that Clemson LSU will likely do a higher ratings number than Ohio State and Texas does. Not that it's a better matchup between two better teams, just it's in the right time slot. And so if I'm Clemson and I know that my football field is going to be the number one most seen football field in America, and OBT Dubs in week one, when everybody's hungry for a little college football, why would I not allow Coca-Cola to give me $2 million to slap their logo on the field? Hell, even if I do it game by game, right? Because maybe Coke doesn't want to give you $2 million when ECU comes to town and you're on, you know, the CW in front of 250,000 people. But you know who might be? Maybe a local car dealership. Maybe a local restaurant. Maybe a local paper company. I don't know. Like a local company would want to be. And maybe I'm not going to get 2.5 milli because I know that Coke's going to have their logo in front of 7.18 whatever million people against LSU. But Bobby's Chicken Shack, which is now available for franchise in Clemson, South Carolina, they might be willing to put their name up there. Maybe Bojangles looks and they go, yeah, you know, we're not national, so there's no reason for us to pay 10 mil to be on in front of the LSU and Clemson fans, but we are very regional across the East Coast, and this gets us on TV in front of all of the Carolinas with ECU coming down to play. Why not throw them 250,000 for that game? South Carolina's looking at this, and while they did not announce what the financial compensation is from Blanchard Cat and Blanchard Cat Rentals to have their logo splayed on the 25, I guarantee you it wasn't nothing. It was probably a big old paycheck. This is why, and I know many of you, because almost inevitably, whenever I talk about the business of sports, which to me is wildly and very interesting, because the business of sport is, at the end of the day, what shapes what you and I and everybody else sees on television. This is why I talk about it. This is why a few weeks ago, when the NCAA announced, yep, y'all can put logos on the field now, I said, go ahead and prepare yourselves, literally everyone, because your sanctuary of college football, the field at the Big House, the field at the Horseshoe, the field between the hedges, the field at the Swamp, the field in Death Valley or the other Death Valley, it's going to get a logo on it. And I'm going to keep it a buck. At some point down the line, it is very possible that the SEC sells a conference-wide sponsorship and they pick up the SEC logo and they put down an SEC sponsor logo. And now we got logos in all four quarters of the field. And then maybe down the line, we look like the bowl games where there's a midfield logo. All of a sudden, the big block C and Sir Big Spur, that's not there anymore. Now it's a big old logo for Hardee's or whatever. At the end of the day, We have allowed college football to morph into this thing where the bottom dollar matters more than anything else. So everything is for sale. Texture says, Gamecock Twitter was exploding yesterday over Cap being on the field. I don't understand why people get angry about some of the things that they do. I get it, because a lot of people have always had this belief, Texture, that college football was sacred, that college football was church. It's religion, and you don't mess with religion. It'd be like walking into a church and seeing that the priest sold sponsorship rights to the tabernacle. You go, whoa, wait a minute, not appropriate. A lot of people have an almost similar level of reverence for their football field. You can slap logos on the signs, on the billboards, up on the Jumbotron. You can play their commercials during the breaks, whatever you want to do. Keep it the hell off my football field. And now, where what they thought was their sanctuary, it's just sold like everything else, my man. Texture said, I have zero issue with it as long as the field doesn't start to look like Ricky Bobby's windshield from Talladega Nights. Oh, it's coming. Every square blade of grass is for sale for the right price. Watch it happen. Now, ladies and gentlemen, talent that can't be bought or sponsored or paid for. Lonzo Sports Flash.
Well, I do get paid.
They can't be paid for.
Okay, yeah. So, and there are several different Bobby's Chicken Shacks, by the way.
Franchise is available.
The Associated Press preseason top 25 dropped yesterday with the Texas Longhorns holding the top spot for the first time in school history. Texas checked in 5 points ahead of Penn State, the closest margin from first to second since 1998. Ohio State holds the third spot ahead of number four, Clemson. Number five, Georgia. Notre Dame is six, and Oregon is number seven. Alabama, LSU, and Miami round out the top 10. South Carolina checked in at 13. Two more Team USA Ryder Cup slots have been claimed. U.S. Open winner J.J. Spahn, who checked in second to Justin Rose in the FedEx St. Jude Championship, and two-time major winner Xander Schauffele will both join Scottie Scheffler when Team USA faces off with Team Europe next month. The Milwaukee Brewers won a 10th consecutive game for the second time this season, making them the first MLB team since 2019 with multiple winning streaks.